Well, hello out there. I think probably quite a few of you are back or on your way back at least. So Suze just gave us a really beautiful overview of five of the paramis, and so I'm going to cover the other five: resolve, energy, patience, equanimity, and wisdom. And like the first five paramis, of course, all of these are very important in our everyday lives and very important in our relationships with other people. But also, there's some of the ones we might be especially likely to be working with in our meditation practice. So I'm going to be talking about these paramis more from that perspective, and maybe, it'll be kind of a balance to show on the cushion, off the cushion, everywhere the paramis are important. So I'm going to begin with resolve, which we might also translate as determination or commitment or perseverance. And this quality, of course, is important in any kind of undertaking that we do. But for this particular talk, I'm going to be speaking of it mostly in the sense of commitment to our Dharma practice, a commitment to the Dharma. And I'm starting with resolve because you have to have a certain amount of resolve to have any kind of a Dharma practice at all. You need resolve to take a beginning course. You need resolve to sit regularly, even if you just do it for 5 minutes in the morning. You need resolve to show up for a course like this. So just the fact that you've even gotten to the place where you're here doing this class shows that you have some resolve. But resolve is something that also really deepens and develops as we continue to practice and really grows out of our sense of faith in the practice. As we continue to practice and we really start to see for ourselves that the things that the teaching talks about actually really make sense and really are true for our own experience, and we see that paying attention to them and following these teachings really helps us in our lives. That really gives us a strong sense of faith, what they call verified faith. It's not just because someone says it, we know for ourselves. And so this makes us have a greater commitment to our practice. And eventually, that commitment really comes from what Sharon Salzberg talks about as an abiding faith, a faith that's has this sense of, this is my path, this is the truth, and I'm staying with it, come what may, ups and downs, good and bad, I know this is the right way for me. So it's a very deep faith, a very strong faith, and a strong commitment to wake up and to make that effort to be free from hatred, greed, and delusion. But what we need to watch out for a little bit with this parami of resolve is that we don't want this kind of pure dedication to get mixed up with our own personal ambitions and our worries about what kind of progress am I making, or, these sort of goals we might set for ourselves in terms of our spiritual practice. And when that happens and the practice gets to be too much about ourselves, we're really setting ourselves up for some painful experience and frustration and disappointment. And I can say that from experience, and I think many of us have been there, and I think almost you kind of have to go there and see it for yourself before you're willing to understand, that what this resolve has to do with isn't really to do with us. It's more a very deep faith in the practice. and that it will lead us where we want to go, not so much from our own efforts, but just from being willing to stay and be with it. Now, when we think about resolve, this sense of strong commitment to wake up, to be free from hatred, greed, and delusion because of the pain we see that these mind states create in us and the pain that we create for other people when we're caught in these mind states, this is a really good and inspiring thing to reflect on. But I think it's also useful to think of resolve much more in our minute-to-minute, everyday time frame, in the sense of having the resolve to do just that one thing that needs to be done next, that one helpful step, that next thing, whether it might be sitting today or doing a retreat, being mindful in the next moment, whatever it is, being willing to do that, because it's having the resolve to take each of these little steps that really creates the end result. So now we may have resolve and a sense of commitment to practice and very high and wise intentions in terms of our practice, but what qualities do we need to make sure that we actually carry out our commitment and our intentions? Well, one of them is energy. And with this quality of energy, we're talking about having the energy for practice in the sense of having the motivation, the enthusiasm, the interest, a feeling that we want to do this, and also having the mental and physical resources to be able to do it. So there's kind of both of those aspects. And energy is strengthened by some of the same things as resolve. Definitely, faith strengthens our energy. You know, when we have a sense that the practice is useful, is helpful, is true, we have more energy to want to practice. And when the doubts are there, well, I think we can all kind of know when we got a lot of doubt and confusion, we don't have very much energy to do anything. We're all over the place and hesitant and all of that kind of thing. So faith really helps. But I think another quality that's really valuable that I mentioned a little bit in the guided meditation is interest. When we're interested in something, we have energy for that thing. And so it can be really useful to, for one thing, on one level, to notice aspects of the practice that really catch our interest, things that feed us. You know, maybe it's doing classes, being in Sangha with other people. Maybe it's the silent sitting meditation. Maybe mindful body movement, whatever it is for you. Maybe a certain subject really interests you. Whatever it is for you, where the interest is, it's good to, you know, make sure that that's part of your practice. And that will help you to have that kind of interest in doing the practice. And also on a more moment-to-moment level, mindfulness itself, whatever we're doing, really contributes to energy. Because if we're willing to actually connect with that present moment's experience, and the mind is really there for it, there's interest. I mean, there's interest and there's energy. And you can really feel sometimes that delight of the mind in knowing whatever it is knowing. And there's a lot of energy there. I mean, when we're bored and don't have energy, it's often because we're disconnected. So having that mindfulness connection really contributes to energy as well. Ajahn Suchito, in his book, which is in our list of resources and you can download for free as a PDF, it's a wonderful resource. He has a very nice definition of energy that says having the resources to resist the push of our psychological habits and to keep awareness awake at places where we would drift into automatic. And I really like that thought. And that's something we can think of whether we're on the cushion or going through our daily life. And maybe a simple way to say that is really having the mental resources to remember to be mindful. We also need to learn how to regulate our energy and not dissipate it. So, you know, avoid getting consumed by draining and difficult mind states. And, you know, sometimes we can get overwhelmed by things that we encounter in our practice, and they're just more than we can take. And it's good to understand that and to be willing to back off when we need to back off. And then when we have the energy to investigate those things. And then also to set wise boundaries in terms of our activity and the information we take in, so we don't do so much and take in so much that we deplete ourselves. And then Ajahn Suchito has another wise advice about being aware of where we're applying our energy and asking ourselves whether our energy is coming from interest and aspiration or from trying to climb the wrong mountain. So in other words, if our energy is all about getting some special state in our sitting or trying to make all of our thoughts go away or any kind of energy that's about making something happen, most generally we're in a fight that we're not going to go in. We're not going to win, and we will just deplete our energy. So, you know, avoiding that kind of unwise application of energy. But we know that however much we try to strengthen our resolve and sustain our energy, there are going to be times when things just don't go the way we would like. I mean, maybe what we would like to have happen doesn't happen. Hard stuff comes up in our body and our mind. Or maybe we just get to a place where we just kind of lose it, you know. And that happens. We all know that it happens. And this is where we need to develop the parami of patience. To really be willing to be patient with ourselves and with this process of awakening. And we need to remember that our own mood and our capacity is going to change. You know, sometimes there'll be a lot of energy, a lot of mindfulness, a lot of resolve, but other times we'll have doubt and confusion. And it's normal. It's very normal. And so not to feel that there's something wrong with us because of that or to get impatient because of it. And as those of you who have been following along with this dependent origination series especially may know, we're working with some really deeply rooted conditioning that has its roots way, way back when. I mean, multiple lifetimes even if we're open to that. And so we can't expect things to change overnight. It really takes time and it requires patience. And also, a lot of times our expectations may be unrealistic. And so it's good to remember that when we get upset and we get frustrated that what we think should be happening isn't happening. Well, you know, we really might not have that much of a clue about what should be happening, especially when it comes to our Dharma practice. You know, so sometimes what we think is bad practice, actually, we're just at the place we need to be and we're seeing what we really need to see. So maybe those things can kind of point at that need for lots of patience. Lots of patience. Patience with our inner conditions, patience with our outer conditions, and most of all, patience with ourselves. Which brings us to the parami of equanimity. And this is the mental quality of being able to meet what is occurring without getting caught in reactivity, without pushing it away, without grabbing onto it. Not that we're indifferent or that we think that everything is great no matter what, but more that we can acknowledge this is the way it is right now and be able to respond in a wise way. When we have equanimity, we have patience, and when we have patience, we're developing equanimity. And when we have equanimity, that helps us to maintain steady energy so we don't get caught up in these mountains that we don't really need to be climbing, or into emotional storms that deplete us. And it helps us to have that stability of mind to actually see clearly what's going on and to take an interest in it, whether it's pleasant, whether it's unpleasant. And equanimity is something that develops naturally with continuity of practice, because as we continue to be mindful and as we continue to return our attention to what's happening in the present moment, studying our attention there, accepting it without, you know, judgment, just seeing what's there, we really cultivate and strengthen our equanimity. And equanimity also grows as we see more and more clearly how changeable our experience is and how much there is about it that we really can't control, even what's going on in our own body and mind. And so we begin to see that this constant reactivity is painful. And not only that, it doesn't even make sense. And so we begin to be more able to just simply be with what is and have that mind state of equanimity. And finally, there's wisdom. Wisdom, or seeing things clearly, supports the development of all the paramis, and it also develops from the cultivation of the paramis. So as we continue to practice, we develop more equanimity, more steadiness of mind. We can really see more and more clearly the Four Noble Truths that we've talked about earlier in class. We actually see for ourselves those three characteristics, the impermanence, the anatta, or impersonal nature of our experience. We see our dissatisfaction and dukkha, and we begin to understand more and more what the teachings are saying and how we create suffering for ourselves and how we can free ourselves from it. But it's also true that the wisdom that we gain as we practice really helps us to cultivate the other paramis. We can see the benefits of practice through our wisdom, and that gives us resolve. We can understand what nourishes our energy, and so we don't deplete ourselves. It takes wisdom to recognize the ups and downs of practice, to acknowledge them and to learn from them, so we have equanimity. So all of these five paramis work together to strengthen and deepen our meditation practice, as well as having really important implications for our everyday lives. So that is kind of a whirlwind tour of the paramis. And we'd like to conclude with some thoughts about how to actually begin to practice with these paramis and make them more of an active part of our practice. So I'm going to start with some general suggestions, and then Suze will take the floor to talk about some of the things that she suggests for those that she talked about, and then I'll come back for mine. So in terms of some general suggestions, we've already said some of these things, but to remember that the paramis are something that we cultivate on the cushion, but very much off the cushion as well. And the first step is to simply get familiar with these paramis so they're on our radar screen and we're aware of them and we're kind of thinking about them, noticing them a little bit more, and then beginning to recognize them when they arise in our own minds. And this is really important, as I mentioned in the guided meditation, because it helps us to see that we all have the capacity for these qualities. We often, you know, first thing we think about is what we don't have or what we're not good at in our own opinion. And so it really helps to see that they actually are there more than we think they are. And when we recognize them and our mindfulness of them, this really nurtures them and helps them develop and grow. So don't immediately focus on what you don't think you have. Look for all of these qualities in yourself and realize that they're there more than you probably think. But that said, it's also helpful to just kind of take an inventory and have a sense of the qualities that come naturally to you and that are stronger, and the ones that are maybe more challenging. Just to kind of get an idea of where you might want to work, where you can pay attention, what needs some cultivation. And for those that maybe need more development, the most helpful thing, rather than saying, I'm going to force myself to be patient or to be this or to be that, just to begin to be aware of the qualities and bring some investigation to them. Notice when they're present. Notice when their opposites are triggered. You know, kind of get an idea of how they work and what affects them in your own mind, and find opportunities to practice with them, to, you know, notice the positive qualities and then be with yourself without acting them out so much when the more difficult mind states are there. And it can also be helpful to choose a particular parami or maybe a couple of paramis to focus on for a period of time. One that you find maybe challenging or that you really feel a need for in your current circumstances, or one that really interests you, and maybe put a special focus on it for a week or a month or however long it seems productive. So those are some general thoughts, and now I'm going to turn the floor over to Suze so she can give some specific ideas about working with the paramis that she discussed.
Thanks, Lyndall. So with generosity, follow through on your impulses to be generous and don't overthink it. So if an idea comes up to do something nice for someone, just go ahead and do it. Don't overthink it. So for renunciation, I love how Joseph Goldstein talks about a lot of thing of like small acts many times. Renunciation is really cumulative when we renounce the idea that we're in control. And notice what happens in your body when you're in a difficult situation and you just kind of say, I think either Lyndall's thing of not now, or just kind of let it be, oh, right, this moment is like this. It may suck, but this moment is like this. And notice how that feels in your body. With ethical conduct, it's really great to write your own precepts. Take the five and then just make it your own little, make them alive for you. Once you've done that, put them somewhere where you can see them. Maybe recite them at the beginning of every sit. With truthfulness, nourish your BS meter, internal and external. And the Buddha says, find friends who love the truth and hang out with them. Now, we can't do much hanging out except via Zoom, but someday we will again. And for kindness, you know, blow kisses to yourself in the mirror. Smile more. Practice forgiveness. If any of you joined us on Monday night, it was just a lovely ceremony, you know. And remember who's on your omit list. And maybe think about, could they even come back for a minute? That's mine. Back to you, Lyndall.
Okay, I see we're running a bit late, so I'll try to be... Well, with resolve, I feel like, you know, that remembering why we practice and the benefits is good, but what works best for me on the practical level is just being willing to do the next thing. It's kind of that slogan that I saw on a runner's t-shirt. You don't have to go fast. You just have to go. So, being willing, you know, having the commitment to do that next thing that comes up for you helps in having resolve. For energy, I feel like interest really helps for me to notice what actually piques my interest, and then energy will follow. And then also to be realistic about assessing your mental and physical resources, resting when you need to rest. And then for both of these, it's also really helpful to be aware of the presence of doubt, because unacknowledged, unrecognized doubt can really sap your energy and your resolve. And if you don't see that that doubt is there influencing you, you may just kind of be blip and not even know why. For patience, wow, so many opportunities to work with it in this time. I think one of the things that helps is a little bit like Suze was talking about, noticing when we're leaning into or when we feel like we're kind of waiting for the next thing. Sort of a cue that impatience is on its way to getting its hooks in. And then, you know, taking a deep breath and reconnecting with what's actually occurring. And, you know, also really remembering for us and for other people that we're all blessed and cursed with this wonderful and frustrating human mind. So if we're having trouble, other people are also having trouble. We're all in the same thing together. So patience for everybody. For equanimity, I think the best way to cultivate it really is doing your Vipassana practice, because we're developing it all the time when we're mindful. You can also cultivate it with a formal practice like metta, which we'll talk about when we do the Brahmavihara day long. And there are phrases for it. But I find that more than really a formal equanimity practice, just some of these phrases in an informal way, repeating to myself when I'm stuck and frustrated. Phrases like, well, this is the way it is right now. This is how things are. This helps me to kind of take a break from being so caught up and be where I am, be with what is. In terms of wisdom, reflecting on the Four Noble Truths, the three characteristics, and especially really investigating dukkha and noticing the places in your life where there's mental pain, frustration, and tension, and having a sense of what we're doing to contribute to that, that really helps us to begin to see where we're trying to control what we can't control, taking as personal what isn't personal, trying to hang on to what is changing, and that really is the development of wisdom. So those are mine. And now we have some time for you to talk a little bit about the paramis in small groups. And how much time are we going to have to do that? 10 minutes maybe?
I think we can do.
If we can do 15?
15.
Okay. So we have some questions for you to consider. You know, just based on what we've said, just think about the paramis in relation to your own practice and, you know, the ones that, which ones come easily, which are challenging, which are interesting, which might you feel a need for. Talk about that a little bit and then maybe consider, if you have time, ways that you might want to cultivate them over the next month and beyond.